Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
All right, folks, we're now going to turn to the first day of the CanaCon Expo. It's a three-day event being held at the Heinz Convention Center. And this festival is for folks who are interested in learning more about the cannabis industry. CanaCon's website invites people to come and make connections that will help them thrive in the marijuana business. Some Massachusetts voters have been eager to build those new business contacts, especially after voters passed Question 4 legalizing marijuana. But legislators are now debating changes to the law, including how high taxes will be and how much say local governments should have in zoning marijuana businesses. Legislators had given themselves a deadline of June 30th to present Governor Baker with a bill, but clearly they failed to meet that deadline. Now proposed changes have some marijuana advocates a little paranoid about how it might impair the sale of recreational marijuana, which is set to begin on July 1st next year. Joining us now is Chanel Lindsay. She's an entrepreneur and attorney who helped write Question 4. She's also going to be a panelist at the CanaCon Expo. Hi, Chanel.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
I know. It feels like morning, doesn't it? So, Chanel, let's start with what's actually happening at the conference. Who's the intended audience?
Well, this conference is really for everyone, people who are already in the cannabis space that have businesses. So you'll see a lot of vendors there offering products and services, ways that people can start being involved in the medical and the adult use side.
Okay.
And then you also see a lot of consumers there as well. They're coming to check out the new products, to see what the different opportunities are for them to get involved in the industry. And then we have a segment that really is for entrepreneurs and investors, and that's our In Cannabis Tank.
And you're going to actually be on this three-person panel, is that right, where budding entrepreneurs can pitch ideas to investors, kind of like a shark tank, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I'm going to be one of the so-called sharks, and we have some great companies coming in, some that are involved in renewable energy.
From around the Boston area?
Yeah, so Boston area. And then we have some renewables coming in from New York.
Okay.
We also have Bloom that's coming in, and they have a technology in the cannabis space. And we're really excited to be able to showcase really a broad spectrum of companies, those that actually are involved with the cultivation and touching the plant, and those on the ancillary side as well.
All right. You know, you just heard us actually listen to this segment, right, about women entrepreneurs and what it's like to be a woman in this space. I'm curious, you're one of the only women, is that right, sitting on this panel? Has it been difficult for women to enter the sort of entrepreneurial space in the marijuana industry?
Well, honestly, there are two different sides to that. On one side, you actually have many more female founders in the cannabis space than you would find in some other industries. Mm-hmm. Yet, we still face some of the same challenges that you would see, lack of access to capital, just generally the cannabis industry in prior to this has really been kind of seen as a male-dominated industry. Mm-hmm. The way that people who use cannabis are kind of portrayed is lacking a little bit in the feminine side. But that really is an opportunity for people because, frankly, people of all ages and all genders use cannabis. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly a lot of people that are looking for products that more fit into their particular lifestyle. And you're starting to see many companies come into the space and offer those solutions.
All right. Is CanaCon also reaching out to communities of color, communities that have somewhat been sort of disenfranchised, I would say, as this, as the cannabis sector has sort of moved from being this thing that was criminalized into something that is now being legalized?
Well, that's a huge part of cannabis legalization that we need to be aware of. You know, the disparate impact and treatment under prohibition, the fact that the majority of people that are arrested and jailed for cannabis are people of color. And that's something we've been really intentional when in Massachusetts of trying to be inclusive, you know, as we're moving forward to protect people against felony prohibitions. And those are some of the things that hang in the balance with the legislative stance right now as we're waiting to see whether or not there are going to be changes to the law. And at this point, we really are encouraging people, you know, to call their state reps and to call the governor and their senators and really demand that the original law be implemented, because we are past the deadline. It doesn't look like there's, you know, there's been much progress. And the Senate bill that came out really was in line with what the voters said. And I think that even Governor Baker at this point has started to imply that we should just be moving forward and implementing the initiative that the voters passed.
So, Chanel, I do want to ask you, though, about the sort of hang-ups in the legislature, right? The Massachusetts legislature says that it's trying to essentially come up with this compromise between the House and the Senate version of bills that would make some changes to the law that was passed by voters. One of the biggest areas of contention has been taxes. Question 4 called for a 12% tax on marijuana products. The Senate wants to keep that in place, but the House has said it wants to increase that tax to 28%, which is essentially more than double what voters approved. Do you have a sense of how that increase in tax could affect the marijuana industry, particularly sort of the business side of it that we've been talking about?
Well, absolutely. It's a big problem to have taxes that would then prevent people from visiting a dispensary. If the cost is too high, it's going to be prohibitive, and you're going to allow the illicit market to still thrive. So the idea is to strike the balance between having enough tax revenue to have the benefit to our state coffers that we're looking for, to have money to go back to schools, to have money to go back to different programs, but you also want to make the product accessible and have people actually using those legal outlets. And that's why it was important, and it's important to keep that tax rate reasonable.
Got it. Okay. So I want to play a little bit of clip of tape that we have. The chairman of the Marijuana Policy Committee in the Massachusetts House, his name is Mark Cusack, has said that the 28% tax, in his mind, is reasonable, and it would be necessary to pay for the implementation of the new marijuana laws. Here he is introducing the bill that passed the House last month.
It's in no one's interest to implement and regulate this new marketplace on a shoestring budget, and that's what we avoid by ensuring that we capture the revenue necessary to implement this in the best way for the people of the Commonwealth.
So, Chanel, I mean, is he right? Do you get a sense that it is a drastic policy change, and that in some ways you do sort of want to ensure that the state is able to sort of effectively enforce the new regulations in any way?
Well, the way that you do that is that you quickly implement and you get those stores up and running, and there'll be plenty of tax revenue coming in
from that, those sales.
Correct.
Got it. All right. Another point of contention has been just the amount of authority local governments should have over zoning marijuana businesses. What's your take on some of the concerns that people have had within sort of the advocacy industry that this could actually hurt the business of marijuana sales as well?
Well, we saw this happen on the medical side. So under the
zoning. Yeah.
Correct. On the medical program, the way that it works is that towns actually have to opt in to allowing medical dispensaries to come. And we've seen that this has been a big issue, because there's a lot of this kind of not in my backyard that happens at the town level. And you have these kind of selectmen or city council or board zoning boards making these decisions, and on behalf of an entire town, a very small group of people. And so when we were drafting the adult use initiative, it was very important that we structured it that if a town didn't want to have, if they wanted to ban a cannabis establishment, that that would actually require a vote by the town, which seems very reasonable. It, you know, if the state and the people pass an initiative, then we should respect the will of that people unless that town has decided differently. And so, and again, it gives the town the option to opt out, but it allows everyone to have a voice in that. And that Senate bill kept that provision, but the House bill changed it essentially back to having to opt in, or having a small group of people, selectmen, be in charge of that very important decision that would impact, you know, everyone in the community.
Got it. Chanel, we just have about 30 seconds left, and I wanted to ask you briefly about something that interests me, particularly after we heard this last segment about women and funding and the difficulties that they face, is that there's also been a concern about funding within the marijuana industry, but a somewhat different concern, right? Because of the legal status of marijuana nationally, there are some financial institutions who just aren't willing to work with marijuana businesses. So how are folks able to gain access to capital?
So banking is a huge issue. you find angel investors. It really is private capital at this point that you're leaning on, or interesting investment techniques, whether it's a loan or a royalty. So there are different ways that you can attract this capital. And you're starting to see banks are very, very interested. They're just concerned about being involved. And so, again, the need for additional advocacy, both on the state and the federal level, because we've really reached a point where this issue needs to be addressed for the entire industry, banking and merchant processing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks so much, Chanel. Chanel Lindsay is an attorney and entrepreneur. She is going to be a panelist at the CanaCon Expo that's happening at the Heinz Convention Center. Thanks again. And stay with us, listeners. There is more ahead. I'm Asma Khalid. This is Radio Boston.